Hey guys, long time no here, but we're back, and this episode we're focusing on the role of family offices in the impact world. So I called up Enrique and asked if he could link me up with some people who know their stuff around family offices, and he linked me up with Adela and Risto from theimpactoffice.com. So I sat down with them, had a call, obviously Enrico there too, and we talked about certain things. What are the roles of family offices? What are family offices and how have they evolved through the past years? And that's what we came up with. Enjoy the episode and welcome back.
You're listening to Conscious Holistic Investment Podcast, the journey of an impact fund.
Hi, Jan.
How are you doing? Hello.
Hey Adela, hi Risto. It's me, Jan. I'm calling from Chi. Enrique is actually in the call as well. Enrique, can you hear us?
Yes. Hi everyone. Hi Risto. Hi Adela. Jan.
Hey. Hi. So Enrique told me that you guys would have a thing or would know a thing or two about family offices, and I talked with Enrique about this matter and how family offices are becoming such a big part of impact investing. So I'll just kick the conversation off with a rude question, so to say. Are family offices the backbone of impact, or have they become the backbone?
Well, I think backbone is probably big word, but I would say there's a natural fit. If you think about family offices, behind these offices there's families, and in families there's people with names and faces and often values, and then when it comes to impact investing, out of the all categories of investors, probably there is more tendency of thinking alongside that capital perhaps should do something more than just financial returns. So yeah, definitely. Maybe not yet the backbone of impact investing, but we're hopefully moving towards that world.
And we can say also as well that if we compare family offices to, for example, venture capitalists, families, they have already this long-term vision and what we call the patient capital that maybe some VCs might not have with expecting 5 years return. So yeah, maybe we'll become the backbone if we take the long-term vision, the patient capital, the willing to leave some legacy, and also this operational business experience that other investors might not have.
I think, Risto, if I remember correctly, you have a rather special approach towards family offices, or at least what a family office is. Would you like to elaborate on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, family office as a term gets used quite a bit, especially these days. But I mean, what is a family office? Family office used to be, back in the day, some sort of trophy asset. Once you have that apartment in Monaco, or the yacht in Monaco, an apartment in Gstaad and so forth, and then you set up a family office in Geneva that handles your private planes and tax evasion. But family offices for us is completely different thing. So family office is actually extension of your values or action arm of your family platform. It's family office can be used for many things. And in our context, it's used to underwrite your worldview, for example, while taking care of your assets and while taking care of your multi-generational wealth and so forth. So when we talk about family offices, I think we should also be careful to not to bucket everybody in the same basket. We read about family offices in Financial Times and everybody thinks there's some sort of mystical entity that marches in and does big deals, but actually there's thousands and thousands of family offices out there that are these days quite normal shops that are investing into their own account, and luckily many of them are actually very impact driven.
So are you saying that investing in impact funds are
the new yachts in Monaco. So it may be, Enrique, are you the new yachts, perhaps?
Not at all. No, Jan, I have no jets or no helicopters or anything like that. I actually use a lot the train, and just like after 10 years, I now have an electronic car, but it was needed for the family, just the only thing.
Are you the new yachts? Are you the new status symbol for rich families? You know, they just don't put their money into oil-consuming luxury boats anymore. They now put it into impact. Or that's what I meant. Are you the new yachts in Monaco?
Yeah, I see. Unfortunately, it's not yet the case. I think that it's more and more an interest from family offices to get to venture capital firms to at least understand what's the work that we are doing in VC. And they are willing to divest more diversify is the word that I was looking for, and try to be on different pockets of investment, and including impact investing. Not all of them, to be very honest. It's still very traditional the way family offices are organized, at least from my personal perspective. However, I see a lot of change, because they don't follow regulators or permission to actually do what they want in terms of investment. So there is more freedom to actually get faster into impact investing.
Did I just hear that right? Did you, Enrique, just contradict Risto? Because if I remember correctly, Risto said they are not organized as they used to be. Or did I get something wrong here? Maybe you can help me here, guys.
If I can just clarify what I wanted to say, is that there are several different categories of family offices, and there is that category that is into yachts and chalets and trophy assets and so forth, but that is not the full picture. I would like to bring into the conversation the other side of family offices, which are not necessarily interested in those things, but are interested in using their family capital for something more meaningful and purposeful than just the profits, while safeguarding the multi-generational wealth. So there is a completely different picture. And we as a group, the Impact Office, we work with some very large and wealthy families, and none of them are driven by yachts or the chalets and so forth. They're actually genuinely looking to use their platform for something purposeful and meaningful and leave a legacy behind that they can be proud of to pass on to their next generation.
And just to perhaps build on what Risto just shared, it's which I find it very fair and honest. I think that we cannot categorize all family offices as one, right? Like there is different types of family office. I was answering just your question of the ones that we had some experience with, and we need of course to work more and on the relationship we are building with some of those very good family offices that are already involved in the impact space, and they are already doing their own efforts. And I think, I mean, we are all trying to get to the same objectives, right? Like better and more specific impact projects and investments.
All right. Yes, please go ahead.
Adela. All right. I just wanted to ask a question to Enrique. Have you seen any difference when you work with elder generations from a family office or younger generations? Have you seen any change the way they talk to you or they approach impact investing?
Yes, and I think that's a great point, because of course the older generations are yet not so familiar with what is impact. And it's more about like generating more wealth or keeping the wealth for the next generation, while the new generations are more interested, open, and I would like to say, even educated on the concept of impact and how they can create their own impact. How can they be part of the social and environmental challenges that we're facing and make a solution?
Mm-hmm.
do you guys, Risto and Adela, do you see a difference between, let's say, old money family offices and perhaps the newer generations?
Totally. So actually at the Impact Office, our group members, they are now generations. And even internally, they are asking us how we can convince our elders or our parents to go into Impact. So I think it's also a very, I will not say issue, but in a generational issue, they are more conscious about what is happening and the transformation that we need to do. And the elder generation, it was more like all money, oil money, right? Mm-hmm. And at the time, the now generation is more focusing into, they are more worried about what is going on in the planet. So we totally see a difference from the now generation and the elder ones. So, yeah.
That's interesting. Can you talk us through how you try to convince the older generation to work with you?
No, so first of all, you can't change people's minds. So they have to come to a conclusion themselves. We have tried, believe
many
me,
times.
To change people's minds and show by facts and figures and carrots and pressure and coercion that this is urgent and needs to be done. I don't think it's a way forward. So we actually identify people who already are believers. So they know it's possible. They know that deploying capital for good can be profitable. You can get market returns or even better. And it's the biggest business opportunity of our generation. When we deal with different segments, let's say they can be age segments or they can be experience or knowledge types. But it is a fact that dealing with, if we take the age, so roughly in the family business world, there's three categories. There's the next gen category, and then there's the now gen category, and then there's the senior generation. And in our little world and bubble, experience is such that the next gens already know, and they already do, and they're already drinking the Kool-Aid, and they want action, and they have the urgency in their bellies, but they can't necessarily deploy the capital yet, so they can't write the checks. And then we are going to the senior generation, and yes, more and more are seeing the light. They understand, but it's often coming from the business opportunity side, or we need to do this so we are future fit as a family business or family office. But it's not genuinely coming that, okay, we are in Impact because we want to change something. It's not intentional, it's not purposeful, or let's put resources onto this opportunity that we can move the needle from A to B. So our sweet spot really is in this now generation, which is growing, and they understand the all sides. They understand the aspect of the business, they understand the aspect of the impact, and they understand the aspect that it is getting really, really urgent that we act immediately.
One thing, Jan, that we have been also doing is to show the elder generation that you can still make a profit while doing good. So when you show the best cases that this is possible, well, you know, if you can do good and instead of not doing it, why not doing it? So if they can see that actually you can also make some returns from it, I think they will pretty prefer go to that route than the previous one.
But on that note, does it stick? So we also have families who were on the path, and we have written impact statements and strategies, and then all of a sudden, beginning of last year, but the family is all of a sudden back in oil and gas. And the question is like, excuse me, you all have this statement and you excluding this whole industry. And the outcome was like, well, it's discounted. There was a massive business opportunity there. So we also feel that if it's glued on, it's not your genuine drive and genuine values. You can write all the papers and mission statements and impact strategies you want. But if there's differences in the value base, nothing real will shift. So looking at people who still do it when things are not perfect or still exclude weapons and oil and gas now that they are booming, I think they are the real value-driven investors of the future.
When you look at the family offices you work with, you mentioned the conflict between the now gen and the seniors. Now, in a couple of years, the now gen will probably have the majority will be the majority shareholders, or just they will dictate what's going to happen with the family money. Do you think we are standing in front of a huge shift from, as you mentioned, the seniors who said, well, but there was still a bargain to make with some weapons and oil, towards the now gen that's really conscious and goes, we'll cut that out completely and go to Enrique and we'll invest in impact only. Is there a huge shift on the horizon?
Oh yeah, I mean, this is it. That's why we're working with the Nalgen. So like you said, we're in the verge of the biggest wealth transfer in human history. And I don't know which numbers you want to quote, but there's 40 trillion of assets exchanging hands in 5 years. And this is the opportunity that we're looking at. So this new generation, not just in investing, is a completely different breed from the previous generation. And a lot of them are very, very value-driven and mission-oriented, and they do things differently, and they talk about different things very naturally that is not yet implanted on the older generation. So really, I have huge hope that if we play this transition correctly, and we get the financial industry to understand that there is a growing demand and market for changing their product portfolios that will move from current greenwashing to actual impact, they can capture market share, they can make sure that they're still alive. We just met a bank who they did an internal research on their clients, and especially this transition from the seniors to the Nalgen. And the Nalgens told the bank that we'd rather go to see our dentist than we come to see the banker. So the banker should be very, very aware that whether they like it or not, the change is real, and they should act accordingly and turn it into a big business opportunity rather than still sell us these lukewarm promises of industry transitions and ESGs and greenwashing, which is still dominating all investment on the traditional finance side.
Quick answer. If you'd have to say a number, what do you think? How many more years will it take till we have a complete shift here?
I don't know. It changes in house. We are sometimes super optimistic and sometimes very skeptical. And I don't think there will be a clear cut transition. It's not like we're removing different players from the scene. There will be very strong traditional financial industry. If you look at current CapEx investments that oil companies are making still to oil and gas investments, these investments are here next 30, 40, even 50 years. So hoping that we somehow, through consciousness and opportunities like Enrique is providing, will shift the whole financial industry, I don't think it's realistic. But like in everything, like industry transition or electrification of industries, it will be fragmented, it will happen in pockets, and hopefully enough these pockets will become attractive and powerful and profitable enough that the old industry will realize that this is the way to go and hopefully one day join us.
You were just quoting John Lennon. Imagine. Yeah. And hope someday they will join us.
Yeah, I would. I think that's the dream.
If I want to add something, and just because John Lennon spent quite some time in New York, I'm coming back from the Climate Week, and now just like a different approach on this, but it's also on the same line. I now see more preparation on the generation coming with much more scientific background, much more interest on what's going on with our climate, what we can do to actually reduce our carbon footprint. I see also that now we have chief sustainability officers in the big corporations. A few years back, this role was not existing at all. And now there is someone that is actually dedicated 100% to check that. I mean, it's little by little, unfortunately. We need to change faster, but I mean, there is something happening. And there is some hope.
Yeah. I believe, and I see the same change as well. But then just to counterbalance that view, also, there has never been as much money channeled into sustainable investments. And everybody we talk to in the big finance is moving to that direction, and yet we are not anywhere close, anywhere nearer achieving any of the SDG goals. And I think we are fighting an invisible enemy that has such vested interest that are spanning across industry, not just financial industry, that we have been purposefully misdirected from the goal. So the goal is to have actual meaningful impact. And yet when you walk to any of these financial institutions that are promising to deliver that, they're happy to build your portfolio and they have to go even to the granular details of SDGs you want to invest in. And then you walk away as a happy customer and continue on your life. And very little scratching of the surface of those portfolios reveals that they have actually nothing to do with those thematics that they were promising. So the climate change fund most often is accelerating climate change in the most blatant cases. Biodiversity fund might hold companies like Amazon or the BlackRock, which is the world's largest investor. They have also world's largest circular economy fund. And guess who's the number one holding? It's a Coca-Cola company. So we are still in this sort of very, very misguided world that is churning out narratives and delivers very little on actual concrete actions and promises.
But it's also, I think, when you see so much greenwashing and fake investments, people, they lose hope as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't, it's like, okay, I think I'm doing good, but actually I'm not doing good. Maybe I'm doing even harm. So what is real? I mean, we talk a lot with Enrique and Team Impact. We have already held several sessions on how to measure impact, how to be sure that it's a real impact and it's not bullshit. But it's very complicated. And even portfolios that they are sold to families as super impactful, they are not at all. So what is the answer? What is real? What is not? And everything is so confusing. So, I mean, there is hope, as Enrique mentioned, but I think still we have a lot of work to do and trying to clarify what impact really means and remove a little bit of the greenwashing that we are seeing still on the financial market and the corporations.
Mm-hmm. And then maybe another angle I wanted to bring to the table. So we all investors, whether we like it or not, we all have money in pension fund and here in Switzerland, Pilar, second pillar and things like this. And we are not listened to. So all of your pension funds are actually also invested in these aforementioned companies like Coca-Cola and so forth. So where is our right to decide for ourselves? And somehow it's easy to pick family offices like you guys, you can lead, you're the value-driven investors and you have the capacity. I said, yes, of course, but how about the rest of us? We all should become very aware where our own capital is diverted to and how do we change that? Is educating ourselves, educating everybody, changing the mindset that investors are some invisible force somewhere. No, we are all investors, and it doesn't matter how many zeros you have on that portfolio, because you can change that with today's technology and logging into your whoever broker you have. You can start making impact investments today. And that's where the big change would become, where the masses would start investing in funds like Enrique's. But we're not nowhere near there. We're not even talking about it. And yet we give the keys to the banks and asset managers, and they keep on doing what they've been doing always.
And they call it just ESGs.
They call it ESG or whatever is the flavor of the month.
But you mentioned a good point there. You know, the grand topic of responsibility, including myself. You know, when I hear impact investing or impact, and I hear family offices, it always feels like it's the job of someone else with yeah. more money. You know, when I think family office, I think of filthy rich families that have a surplus that they can just, you know, either put into a yacht in Monaco or then something else. But what you mentioned there is actually a real good point. Maybe you could even elaborate a bit more on that, because I find it quite inspiring.
Well, I mean, that's it. So it's funny. So we have like I mentioned, 7,000 family offices on the planet, and very few of them actually are massive. And somehow, even in our scene, family offices think that, oh, no, we're not big enough, so let's let the biggest family offices to take care of this and this, and they should lead the game, and they should do this risky investment, and they should create this new asset class. But it's not the case. We all need to do it. And then family office, okay, you're already established and you have liquidity. But really, today, anybody and everybody can and should start investing. It's for your own benefit. And once you start investing, you can actually influence things. So deploying your capital to things that matter. You can vote with your wallet when you invest in a company. These days, even access to private equity, it used to be that you need 100K plus to even consider private equity as an asset class. These days, a couple of thousand and you're in through different syndications and platforms. So this is sort of, rhetoric hasn't changed, but these days all you need is some knowledge and a computer and whatever extra cash, hundreds or thousands you have, you need to deploy and deploy it smartly. Because when we do it at mass, that's the key to change.
Maybe I'll put something in the end as well to elaborate on that. But is there, could you, as of right now, give us or our audience or listeners a quick tip on how someone with a smaller purse than maybe someone with a family office could actually just, you know, as of right now, do impact investing? Is there a tip you could give?
I can't get it started.
Yeah.
Don't overthink it.
And so getting started with investing, first of all, getting comfortable that you don't need the bank in the middle, getting comfortable with the multitude different platform, how it works. It's made to seem to be a really complex world. It's not at all. And then, of course, it gets more complex if you start identifying, analyzing different impact opportunities. But you don't even have to go there. You can start with different kinds of platforms. You can start with this, let's say, not so ideal sustainable investing before you move into impact investing. And once you get comfortable, there's again a new set of different tools and platforms and educational, free educational materials that you can tag along. And the tip is, for me, is acquire the knowledge, get started, start believing that you can do it yourself. You can't outsource this, one of the most important things in your life, and it's also beneficial for yourself. I mean, also building your personal portfolio, building wealth, and then moving to impact, underwriting your worldview through your assets, and compound interest is the biggest force in the planet. So once you do it long enough, all of a sudden those small streams of capital can become fairly significant when we are on the duration of 20 years or 30 years or even longer.
And also, we add to that, don't be scared about asking questions and asking your peers and those who have already walked the talk. At the impact office, actually, we really leverage on the peers' learning. So families, they can already go through, or now generations, they started the impact investing journey. They teach others how to do so. And they actually still say, listen, I don't know if it's the way, but this is my way. And we are just testing and learning. And that's okay not to have all the answers, but just get started, identify what are your values, what you care about, and just go there. Just put your heart and start. And even if they are small tickets, we are also trying to look at different models for investment, like syndications model with smaller tickets. That's totally fine, but we have just to take to get started, and little by little, we can increase a little bit more those ticket sizes and the impact that we are making. So yeah, don't educate yourself. Don't be scared of asking questions. Leverage on your peers, and yeah, get it started.
And like very concrete approach is that it's really, really simple in the end. So if you take ESG, for example, there's two great ESG companies, and one of them exists to bottle sugar water in plastic bottles and sell it to consumers. And it's star rated in ESG world. There's another company that its mission is to eradicate diabetes from the planet and is in diagnostics game and actually solving some of the consequences of the first company I mentioned. But somehow in the traditional finance, these companies are equal. So they're both great. They both have enough women on the board. They have great healthcare for their employees. So therefore, they are top in class in ESG. But you, as an individual, can very quickly see that one of these companies is actually beneficial to the planet. They have a mission that is actually useful. And the other company is churning out 200,000 plastic bottles every day and dumps them in the Pacific, whatever plastic junkyard there is. And this is the level of understanding that is enough. So you would never invest in the first company ever, regardless of the ESG core. And then you start finding and cultivating opportunities that are here for a reason, and they communicate it very clearly. And actually the company, second company that I mentioned, it has been extremely profitable investment, and it's listed and it's huge business.
But it goes back to the education. So the first example that Risto gave, they are actually sold as a sustainable portfolio to families.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's on the top rating of the ESG, but it's not going any good for the planet. So it's also about us educating and asking the right questions to the asset managers and fund managers. So I really want to know a little bit more, get your hands dirty, understand who actually are the companies that are in that portfolio. Because the company that Risto was mentioning is already sold as one of the top five of impact companies in that portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the second one is much better, right?
Yeah.
It makes much more impact.
So it doesn't have to be complex. You don't need a 200 data point SDG dashboard to understand that some companies are actually here for purpose that is useful for any of the dimensions of impact. And then there's some companies that probably should not be here. But of course, we are every company has a right to operate to a point at least. But investing, it doesn't have to be as complex as they might make you believe.
Having listened to your explanations, I think you and Warren Buffett are not best of friends, I assume.
I love Warren. He just makes horrific choices. He has no impact focus, but I really admire his investment strategy.
Okay. Believer. Except for the company with the sugar water. But anyway.
He's my hero when it comes to strategy, but he has no clue of impact, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'd also think that, if we stick to the aforementioned family office models, he's probably more in the category of the seniors that need some convincing from now.
That's a fair statement, yes.
So anyway, I am checking the clock, and although I'd love to talk with you for hours, you got to bounce. But I'd like to end it actually with a quote I found from an article that you guys sent us from, and it's from Jed Emerson, and he said that I think the future is so bright that you need to wear sun. I'll start over. He said, I think the future is so bright that you need to wear shades. We're in a great moment of opportunity. So just as a quick to round this episode up, do you guys agree with that? Maybe we can start with Adela and end with Enrique.
I don't want to be the pessimist one. Yes, there is hope. But we can't. We have to. How we say it? I think there is hope, but we are not still there, and we are always looking to the other side. Like, the government should do this, the company should do this, the investors should do this, and we don't look ourselves in the mirror, and we identify that as we are responsible for the impact that we want to see. So. Yes, there is hope, but we have to get our hands dirty, start by yourselves, and then collaborating with others.
All right, Risto, you're a bit more optimistic?
Absolutely. I'm 100% optimistic. I think we're living it already. I mean, just looking at my lifespan, I'm 47, and seeing the transition that we went through, I think we're sitting on this big convergence of tech and impact and environmental awareness and consciousness that I will still see to change the world for better. And we're going to change, instead of being resource hungry consumers, into fully fledged cradle to cradle thinkers that this resource is precious and valid and viable. And so I'm full of optimism, but we're going to go through some really, really bad times before we get there. So, and I hope they don't last too long. and we emerge on the other side very quickly with a brand new mindset and brand new way of looking at things and what is value and what is wealth and what should we be precious enough to preserve.
All right, and last but not least, Enrique, what do you say?
I would say that we all need to feel responsible. I think already Risto mentioned this, but looking at what we are doing and being responsible of where our money is going, even if we are a bit afraid of how to invest, like I'm actually just speaking about like the very, very young generations, but they're still a workforce and they have a pension. So these people should be looking at what the pension funds are doing, how they are investing their money, because it's their money what they're investing, and trying to put more hands-on on that and understand how can they suggest them in a very strong way to put that money into something that is more impactful, more oriented to their values, perhaps, seeing that the new generations have a different value towards nature and what we need. So I give that as my two cents of how can we make a change.
All right. So that's great. We are at least the majority is opportunistic. Optimistic. That's what we are. Optimistic. Oh man, I was still stuck at your bottled sugar water.
Yeah.
And we are optimistic. All right. So it was great talking to you guys. Thank you so much. I think I would love to talk to you some time again, especially about the topic of responsibility, which we didn't touch today, but we touched many other things. And I'm very grateful that we had you on, and hope to hear you sometime soon again. I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Jan, for having
us. Thank you.
Bye.
Ciao, Jan.
Real pleasure.